ఓం సహనాభవతు సహనౌనః సహవీర్యంకరవావహై తేజస్వినావధీతమస్తు మా విద్విషావహై ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. యత్ పంచకోశాత్మకమస్ యత్పంచకోశాత్మకమస్తిదేహం తరంతరాఖిం భువనం చకాస్తి తరంతరాఖిం భువనం చకాస్తి. దేహం వినా పంచవిధం తదేతత్ దేహం వినా పంచవిధం తరేతత్ పశ్యంతి కేవా భువనం భనంతు. Meditation was based on what these verses that Brahman is talking about now. What he says is, yat pancha kosha ఆత్మకం అస్తి దేహం తద్ అంతరా కిం భువనం చకాస్తి. దేహం వినా పంచవిధం తత్ ఏతత్ పశ్యంతి కేవా భువనం భనంతు. కిం భువనం భువనం చకాస్తి. Does this bhuvana, bhuvana means the universe, this world, does this universe shine? Does it appear? Does this universe appear without tad antara, means without that, without what? He says, this body, dehamasti, yet panchakoshatmakam dehamasti. Does this universe appear? Does it shine? Is it something that is established, is evident to you? Without the body, which has the five koshas, the panchakoshas. The panchakoshas, the physical body, is often, you know, we break the physical body up into different parts in Vedanta just to try to understand all of the components of it. One way of viewing the physical body is in the jiva, I would say the whole jiva upadi, the whole transmigrating jiva, is to view it in terms of koshas. Koshas are sometimes called sheaths. Pancha is five. So if I were to look at this physical body, I would say this physical body here is called the anamaya kosha. It's a covering of yourself called the food sheath. It's a covering of the self. When we say it covers me, the atma, the conscious being, this body covers me, this conscious being. How does it cover me? Some people think, oh, it covers me. There's a little pea of consciousness, you know, like a pea in a pod. There's this little pea of consciousness inside this physical body. The physical body is like a kosha, a covering it. Sometimes if you have like a blade of grass that has, you know, like a stalk over it, and you peel off the stalk, then the little blade, fresh little blade is underneath, that's called a kosha. I think your atma, you know, is covered by this physical body called a kosha, the anamaya kosha made of food. It's not that kind of covering. The type of covering they mean here is that this physical body is called anamaya kosha. It means a covering that's made of food, because this body is really nothing but, you know, modification of food. It's a covering in the sense that I actually take the atma, myself, to be this body. And because of that self-ignorance, by my saying, I am this body acts as a covering born of ignorance. So now what Ramana is saying, so that's the first, anamaya kosha. Let me just go through these one by one. The second kosha, each covering is considered more subtle than the one before. The pranamaya kosha is when you think, well, this physical body, you know, I am the physical body, that's what makes it a kosha. But then you can say, well, I'm not really the physical body, I am the life force that enlivens the physical body. So I'm actually the prana, the vital force that energizes the body, makes the body function, allows me to breathe in and out, gives me a circulatory system, a digestive system, you know, excretory system, ejects the soul at the time of death. It's all considered prana. So that pranamaya kosha enlivens this anamaya kosha, this physical body. So, but the prana, then I can also say, so I am the vital force that enlivens the body. So it becomes a kosha. Because again, I take me, the conscious being myself, to be that. Then I can go in one more and say, well, actually, I'm much more than just a living body. I'm a thinking, feeling, experiencing body. You know, I experience my body. So I must be the manomaya kosha. I have a mind and sense organs. When we take the mind and sense organs together, that's going in. You know, and I look at myself as just somebody who is perceiving, who's feeling, who's having emotions. That's manomaya kosha. And that's certainly more me, you know, than just the prana and the physical body. Because without a thinking being, what is there? That's much closer to me. And you can say, well, but even more closer than that. So first you think, well, that's who I am. But there's something nearer to me than that. It's the vijnanamaya kosha, the buddhi, the ahankar. The buddhi means the intellect, the one that comments on my feelings, that comments on my perceptions, that tries to make sense out of things. And the one who even says, I am. Like say, the manomaya kosha is really the experiences that I'm having with the sense organs, but the buddhi, the vijnanamaya kosha, is the one who has a running commentary on this is like this, this is like that, this is what I believe in, all of these type of things. And also has that ahankara, the I thought, the one that says, I am. And then that same buddhi, the vijnanamaya kosha, that says, I am an intelligent, conscious being who has a mind and a living body. That's who I am. So the one who's making the commentary, that's me. And that's what we call the vijnanamaya kosha, this intellectual, intelligent being who is decisive and makes decisions. And then we can go even one step further into what they call the anandamaya kosha. Now, this is interesting. The anandamaya kosha, there's different ways of dealing with it, but I'll just tell you in this way. The anandamaya kosha is the bliss experience that you have in your mind. It's what's responsible for those moments of happiness and joy. The moments of happiness and joy, as opposed to the manomaya kosha, where there's all of the dukkha, the depressions and the sorrows and the agitation, that's all taking place in the manomaya kosha. The anandamaya kosha is where you say like this, I am so happy. I'm so full and complete. You know, this is who I am. This is how I'm supposed to be. Thank you so much for giving that to me. That's the ajnana. So the anandamaya kosha is the experience of happiness and fullness and what's in as a state of mind. Now, when you have, I'm sure everybody kind of remembers these benchmark experiences where you have a moment of deep happiness, where you recognize in that moment of deep happiness, this is who I am, this is how I'm supposed to be, right? This is what I'm always supposed to be. Why does it keep slipping away, you know? So I know that this is who I am. Why does it slip away? Or in moments when everything is going perfectly for you and you have a moment of quiet, a moment of resolve, and then you'll enjoy that for a moment and you know this is exactly how you always want to be, and then you become fearful because you know that it's going to go away. Those experiences are all anandamaya kosha. And what they are is they're a thought modification where at that particular moment there's no impediments at all. But there's total ignorance. There's a quiet shantavritti that gives you this experience that is not being impeded upon by anything in the world. It's just a relaxed, quiet, like a very quiet, clean mirror reflection of yourself, in a sense, that gives you this this temporary experience of pure happiness, and then your thought about it is, this is who I am, this is how I want to be. And then that vritti goes away. Okay? And then you think, how can I make that stay? How can I stay? Why do I keep eluding myself like that? So there's an experience, the Anandamaya Kosha gives you an experience, and that's when you say, this is how I'm supposed to be. And that's the closest experience that you can have to yourself, in a sense, from the standpoint of the koshas, right? Because there's still an identification. And the kosha just really, the mind just gives you a state of experience that comes and goes, like it's a thought. It's like every other thought. See what I mean? And so here, of these five koshas, the one, Ramana, is really dealing with the body when he says the deha, in terms of all five koshas, not just the physical body. Because it's all of these five koshas that are giving you, in a sense, different levels of experience. The experiences are just the experience that the body, the mind, the sense organs, are able to produce for you. And those experiences all can be placed in a kosha. So here what he says is that, can this universe of experience shine? Can it be experienced without the body, which is comprised of these five koshas? Can the universe be known? Can you establish its existence without a body, without a physical body that comprises all of these five koshas? And it's interesting when we do the Driktrisha Viveka, the seer-seeing differentiation. If you were just to take away one sense organ at a time, the universe disappears. And just take one sense organ at a time. It's not only the universe that disappears, your physical body disappears, because the only way that you know you have a physical body is through those five sense organs. Okay? And so what he's saying here, so he goes, can it be known? Can it shine? Is it there? I mean, is it even there for you? Is it there without a body, which is comprised of these five koshas? Then he says, without the physical body, without the body, which is fivefold in terms of these koshas, deham vina, without the body, panchavidam, which is fivefold, means these fivefold koshas, without that, then he says, who is it, keva, who is it who sees the universe? Without the body, without the five, who is there to see the universe? So he says, Banantu. Let them tell. Let them speak to that. It means let you all, let everybody speak to that. Who is there to experience the universe if you take away the physical body? So this is a set of three verses. I just want to see what I'm thinking about, how much I want to do in each verse. Let's include this next verse before I really get into this, okay? Shabdadi rupam puvanam samastam. Shabdadi rupam puvanam samastam. Shabdadi satendriya vritti basya. Shabdadi satendriya vritti bhasya satendriyanam manaso vishesyat satendriyanam manaso vishesyat manomayam tad bhuvanam vadamaha manomayam tad bhuvanam vadamaha. Your experience of, when we say the bhuvana, this whole universe, is really through the five, what we say, the five sense objects. I won't get into all that. The five sense objects. We can break the experience of the universe into the five sense objects. Shabda means sound. sound is known to me because I can hear it. Sparsha means touch. Touch can be known to me because I have a sense of touch. Rupa. Forms can be known to me because I have eyes. Rasa. Taste can be known to me because I have a sense of taste. Then Gandha. Gandha is smell because I have a sense of smell. There's a relationship between my five sense organs and the universe, which is comprised of the five sense objects. Right? And so he says, Shabdadi Rupam Bhuvanam Samastam. This entire universe is really these five sense, is in the form of these five sense organs, five sense objects. This whole universe that we experience can be broken into these five sense objects, because these five sense objects are the only thing I can know through my five sense organs, right? So the five sense organs and the five sense objects go together. That's my experience of the world. So I could divide, I can break the whole world out into that relationship, the sense organs and the sense objects. And that's what creates the world, right? My world of experience. So he says, this bhuvana, this entire, samastam bhuvanam, this entire universe is really just in the form, rupa, of shabdadi, shabda sparsha rasa gandha, you know, rupa, gandha, rasa gandha. Means in terms of sound, touch, form or color, taste, right, and smell. Then he says, shabdadi satta. So the whole universe is just these five sense objects. Then he says, shabdadi satta, the existence of these five sense objects. Satta means their existence. That these five sense objects, this universe, which is comprised of these five sense organs, sense objects, that is even there, that they even exist. Shabdadi satta, the existence of these five, beginning with sound, that they, their existence, he says, indriya vritti bhasya. Their existence is illumined by the activity of the sense organs. Without the activity, the vritti here means vyapara activity, without the activity of the sense organs, right, their existence would not be known. So their existence, the existence of the five sense objects, is illumined, is established, right, by the activity of the sense organs. Then he says, Satta Indriyanam. He says, Manasaha Vashe Syat. He says, but the existence of the sense organs, Satta Indriyanam, the existence of the sense organs, is dependent, Manasaha Vashe, is dependent upon the mind. Without the mind, without the mind engaging in the sense organs, you don't even have any consciousness of the sense organs. The Swamiji always uses these examples, and I think it's these type of examples are kind of worth applying to your own experience. Like, you can be sitting in class, the teacher is talking, could even be saying something really important. Teacher is talking, class is being, as the subject matter is being unfolded, but you are daydreaming. You know, you're daydreaming. Where are you? Your body is here, the sense organs are here, but where are you? Your mind has no cognition unless the mind is using the sense organs. Right? The sense organs are not functioning. That's why people will be sitting in class, you know, and they'll be like this, kind of. And then they'll go like that. Oh, what did I miss? Yeah. Have you ever been, you know, sometimes even you can read reading a book. These are all the stock examples. You're reading a book and all of a sudden you realize that you've gone a few pages and you have no clue. Yeah. I even do it with when I'm driving and I'm, you know, with my audiobooks. And all of a sudden I realize that I probably missed the last 10 minutes. And I have to go back. I go back and back and back until I get something I remember. Because I was in my mind. The sense organs are under the control of the mind. if the sense organ, if the mind is not utilizing the sense organs, you know, present to the sense organs, they are there. They're not being used, they're not functioning. And so he says like this, if really, you know, the sense, the existence, the very existence of the sense organs are under the control of the mind, because when the mind's not using them, from your vantage point as a jiva, you know, like I can see you have sense organs, but from your vantage point, they're not there. What is there is whatever you're thinking about, whatever the mind is doing. Okay? So now what he says, that being so, he said, that being so, therefore, tadbhuvanam vadamaha, therefore we say that this whole creation is manomayam. It's only the mind alone. It's only the mind alone. You have to watch out for Ramana, because you have, you know, it's not solipsism. You know? But when Ramana is teaching, he is trying to give you this knowledge from the standpoint of your experience as a jiva. Right? And so if you look at your experience, like what I was doing a little in the meditation, in your experience there are all of these things that are coming and going. Depending, you know, from the panchakoshas, either you're using your sense organs and those are giving you vrittis, those are giving you thought modifications, you know. You're becoming aware of your physical body, or you're hearing the sounds outside. That's all from the sense organs. And those are the mind using the sense organs. And then you're aware of all of this input that's coming and going, coming and going, and coming and going. But all of the sense perception that you're aware of is because the mind is engaged at that moment with those sense organs, and so those sense organs are giving thought modifications to the mind. See what I mean? Like, that's why he's saying, all of this world that I'm looking at now, I am aware of it right now, because I am using my eyes to see it. Like, if everybody's with me at the moment and I say, please use your eyes to look at this room, and you all hear me and you all do it, at that moment, what is happening for you is that through the use of your eyes, a thought modification in the mind is taking place, which you illumine. Right? Everybody understand? If you're using the sense organs, then they are providing a thought modification, which is relatively true to the world, to this room. It's in a kind of a shared reality. And so now this world, through the use of your eyes and sense organs, the world of this room, is in your experience. All right? But now, without the use of the sense organs, this room would not be in your experience. Say, for instance, instead of using the sense organs to see the room, your mind is daydreaming. Okay? Then what is filling the mind, the thought, is whatever is the content of the daydream. The content of the daydream, if you're really engaged in it, has no relationship with the sense organs or the sense objects of the sense organs. The only thing that is happening to you at that time is whatever's going on in the mind. Right? And so what he's saying now, that being the case, your experience is only what is going on in the mind. The experience of this world, right? The experience of the world is really the experience of what is going on in your mind. Nothing else. You see that? You see how that is? There's nothing else at all. So then he says, he says, when it's the mind that even controls the existence of the indriyas, the existence of the sense organs, the mind controls it, because when the mind is using the sense organs are there, but when the mind's not using the sense organs, then the only thing that is there from your standpoint at that time is whatever the mind happens to be doing. And so this universe that you experience as a jiva is nothing but the mind. And that's true for all jivas. That's not saying solipsism. We're not saying here that it is the mind that is creating this universe that in which we all have a shared reality. That isn't the point. The point is we're looking at your experience. And the experience that you have of this universe is manomayam. Manomayam, manas means the mind. Manomayam means it's just comprised of the mind alone. You can't even Jung realized that. You can't get out of your own mind. You know, you're seeing this universe through the lens of your mind. And your mind is dependent upon your sense organs, your thoughts, your moods, emotions, your intellections, your fantasies, your images, mind alone. Either the mind, which is using the sense organs to perceive something, the physical body and what is external to it, or the mind is off on its own journeys, and that's what's being experienced. So he says, therefore we say that this whole universe, the bhuvana, this whole universe, you know, really is nothing but the experience of the mind. It's nothing but the mind at all itself. Okay? So then let's do the next one and then we'll be complete with this little set.
Dhyasaho deti dhyasameti lokastato dipravibhasyeshah lokastato dipravibhasyeshah diloka janma kshayadhama puranam diloka janma kshayadhama puranam sadvastu janma kshayashunyamekam sadvastu janma kshayashunyamekam dhya saha udeti dhya astam eti astam eti lokaha tattaha di pravibhasya eshaha di loka janma kshaya dhamma puranam sadvastu janma kshaya shunyam ekam.
He says, now that we've got the whole thing down to being the mind, he says, dhyā is in the feminine instrumental singular. Saha dhyā, it's with the buddhi, it is with the mind. And as we'll see in the bhāṣa, what he's talking about by the buddhi here is really the I thoughts. I'll talk about that in a minute. So we'll just for now say with the buddhi, saha udeti, it rises. This universe rises with the mind. Dhyā astameti, and it sets with the mind. The universe rises with the mind, and it sets. Like the setting of the sun, right? So as the mind becomes awake, the universe appears. When the mind goes to sleep, the universe disappears. So the universe rises and sets with the mind. He says, lokaha tattaha di pravibhasya eshaha tattaha. Therefore, eshaha lokaha, this world, this universe, this bhuvana, this whole world of experience, he says, di pravibhasya means it is something that comes into being, shines, appears, because due to the buddhi, due to the mind, right? It comes into being, it is something that is lit, that is known, pratibhasya, completely, on all sides. It is known only by the mind, because of the mind. Then he says, di loka janma kshaya dhamma purnam sadvastu janma kshaya shunyam ekam. I'll just translate this and then I have to unfold it. It's a lot what it has to say. He says, the sadvastu, sadvastu for now, we'll take it like this, that which is real. A vastu, for something to be a vastu, it has to actually be, it has to actually exist. There's no, for what is sat, there's no coming and going. It's not coming into being and going out of being. The vastu, the thing, is sat itself. It is being itself, right? It isn't something that comes into being and goes out of being. See, listen to this language. We say, oh, something comes into being and goes out of being. It comes into being and it goes out of being. Being is what is there. Something comes into being and goes out of being. Being is there. You see what I mean? Being remains. Something comes into being, goes out of being. You could say same thing for consciousness. Consciousness is. Something comes into consciousness and goes out of consciousness. Consciousness doesn't come into consciousness and go out of consciousness. Being doesn't come into being and goes out of being. Things come into being and go out of being. But if something comes into being and goes out of being, that means that before it comes into being, it was not. See how the language goes? If you say, something comes into being, and then it goes out of being. That means on either side of its coming into being, it has no being. Right? But being itself can't come into being and go out of being. It is the being into which something comes and goes out of. Something that comes into being and goes out of being can't have being itself because it has non-existence on either side. It's a very simple concept. I think the words are a little convoluted. But if you go back to the good old clay pot, if you have a lump of clay and you make that lump of clay into a pot, the pot comes into being, not the clay. The clay is what is there. The pot comes into being and it goes out of being. What if I squash it? I squash the pot into a plate. Nothing has happened to clay. Clay hasn't come into being and go out of being. Clay is what is. But the pot has no being of its own. See, that there is no separate thing, pot. And so we can talk about the pot as something that comes into being and out of being, but it's all silly in a way because nothing has come into being and gone out of being. The only thing that is there is clay. Right? But pot is useful. And the whole universe is like that. You know, something comes into being and goes out of being. But being doesn't come into being or go out of being, so actually nothing has happened in terms of reality, in terms of what is actually there. And if you look at it in terms of your experience of your mind, a thought comes into being, into consciousness, goes out of consciousness. You just abide there. You're not doing anything, not one thing. Like when we were doing in the meditation, you notice that. Your mind is changing, the thoughts are changing, the moods are changing, the perceptions are changing. You are doing nothing. So you have all of these things coming into being, going out of being, but your being, the I am, simply remains. It's not touched at all. And it's even the I am consciousness. It's not even consciousness of anything. It's self-evident. It's the self-evident sun because of which everything is lit up. But I'm not doing anything to light anything up. I am simply consciousness. And when you just sit for a moment, slow your experience down, that is what you see. I simply am. I, the conscious being, simply am. And that amness is what that me, that amness that I simply am, is what I am most attached to. But everything else comes and goes. I don't. I am the one who is at the center and the self, the changeless self of all experience. We don't usually make this differentiation. You're actually the mind, you have to kind of become a mumukshu and say, what is really going on and who am I? To make you take the time to sit back and analyze all this. You know, to figure out, do I come and go? Do I come and go? Am I going to die? What is the purpose of all of this? What is the nature of Ananda? What am I doing? What is going on? You have to have these kind of questions. You know, I always joke when I came back from India and my mom made the mistake of asking me, you know, what I learned there, what I was doing. I started to tell her, and her eyes just glazed over. And she said something like, oh, I don't have those kind of problems, honey. I don't have those kind of problems. In other words, no, I don't need to know all of this. And I wasn't telling much either. You know, I don't need to know this. And most people do not need to know it. You never even think about it. You're born, you die, and in the meantime, do the best you can and have a nice life and be good. I remember my father saying, well, I don't know if there's a God or not, but just in case there is, I do the best that I can. Because there may be. He may be looking down, and then he laughed. You know, but he may be looking down and care about what I'm doing, and I try to do my best. You know? That's what he said. But that was the end of it. You know, the rest was all samsara. It was all trying to live a life here and to have a solid life for myself and have some accomplishments and have enough money, have security, have a nice family and all of that. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. That was the realm. That is the realm for most people. There may be a heaven or hell, I don't really know. I hope so. But that's it. You know, the rest of your mind and life is engaged in what you're doing within this duality, within samsara. But then, at some point, you say, somebody says, is there anything more? Who am I? What is this all about? You know, then it's a whole different type of inquiry. You know, it's a totally different type of inquiry, which is what we're engaged in now. Right? And so, here, when you get into an inquiry like this, it isn't just theoretical. We're talking about, we're using words that are actually trying to point to the actuality of your experience. Like when you're sitting, like when we do a meditation like that, or at this moment, it's nice to slow things down because it makes it more, it highlights the fact of it more. But in fact, your being is stable. It never changes. That is something, those are not, it's not a catechism. Those are words that are pointing to the reality that your presence is something stable that never changes and can never change and can never be covered in any way. And nothing can light it up. Nothing need light you up. Your consciousness, your conscious being. Nothing can be done about it at all. But everything else comes and goes. Everything. Everything else. And because everything else without exception comes into being and goes out of being, some at a more rapid rate, some at, you know, more slowly, but even then the entirety of your experience is continually changing. It is very possible for you to sit and notice that fact, because you're here and the experiences are here. You don't change, everything else does. That's not a theory. That's a reality to be noticed. You know? And so here, this is how Ramana is proceeding to try to make you notice that you can think, he looks at it like this. Like say you're asleep at night and the alarm goes off and you wake up. Whether it's from dream or deep sleep, doesn't matter. The alarm goes off and you wake up. When you wake up, the first thing that happens now is the mind, which has you, that changeless consciousness, as itself, is now awake. And so the first thing that is there is that, to that awake mind, is your own presence. The mind is awake to your own presence, because there's nothing that can come before that. Right? And so that's why he's saying here that buddhi is that ahankar, the I that comes. When the mind awakes, is the I. So now my presence is there in the form of this mind. I'm illumining the mind, but from the standpoint of the mind, I am awake. And so with the awakeness of the mind, the waking up of the mind, the I thought comes, as does everything that comes into my experience. So now the awake mind is there in the form of I am, and I am now aware of whatever world is there. Whatever thoughts are there, whatever perceptions are there, it's now I am awake to the world. And so what he's saying here is, he's saying, this world, he says, this very world is something that becomes known only with the rising, the awaking of the mind. So when the mind wakes up, it's here. When the mind goes to sleep, it is gone. The experience of the world is not there. So with the mind awaking, I am there as the thought that says I am. This is just a thought. I am the I am thought. And everything that fills that thought. So then I come into relationship with the thought, and the world of experience is there. And then he says, now, that being the case, I am not the I am thought, but the one from whom the I am thought comes. Buddhi wakes up. I am the abode, he says, I am the abode of the janma and kshaya, of the birth and death of this world. The world of the buddhi. The buddhi means the I thought, and the loka, the world of experience. I am the substratum, I am the container of the birth and the death of this world, right? And of the buddhi from which is holding this world, of the I thought that's holding this world. And that Dhamma, that abode from which all of this experience comes, is itself Purnam. Purnam means it is completely full. It's lacking nothing. It is whole and complete to itself. It is Janma Kshaya Shunyam. It itself is without birth and death. In other words, the experience of the universe comes into it and goes out of it, but it doesn't come into being and go out of being. So that self is what we call the Sadvastu, the conscious being that I am, which is there as everything comes into being and goes out of being, itself not coming into being or going out of being. Mm-hmm. So when you're just sitting with your own experience, these are the things to notice. That as all of this change, in all of the change is taking place, and it can't but be taking place, yourself is not budging. There's no change taking place. There's no beginning, and there's no end, and there's no time. Without change, there's no time. And so there's no coming into being, there's no going out of being, there's no modification, there's no time. And also, when there's no time, no change, there's no objectification then, there's not two. There's not two people inside. To be two people inside, you have to be within time and space. Consciousness itself is not an object in time for you to be aware of. If you're aware of it, then you can differentiate it from something else. There's subject and object. But consciousness, your being, which is simply abiding, self-lit consciousness, isn't coming and going. And so therefore, for it's not something that you can look at, that you can objectify. And therefore, it is only one. Only one means it's indivisible. You have to think about, it's a huge thing for something to be divisible or for something to change. If you bring these things in, like divisibility, if you bring time in, bring change in, you're immediately within duality. Because if something can change, it means there's two. There's parts. Otherwise, it can't change. If it can't change, it's not within... If it can't change, if it can't be objectified, it's not within duality. If it's not within duality, there can't be two. You just think about it, For something to be two, you have to be within time and space. And look at your own self-experience. When you're just sitting with your own presence, how many people are there? You can say in reference to your mind, there's a lot of people there. There's a lot of moods. There's a lot of emotions. I have a lot of different parts to myself. I'm complex. But you, the person because of whom all of this is known, is not complex. You are the most simple. There's nothing more simple than your own presence. And what is the nature of that presence? That's why you have to ask yourself, when you're in... This is something that can be kind of confusing to people. When you're sitting, say, for instance, in meditation, and I say in the guided meditation, and I'm pointing out, notice all of the thoughts coming and going. That's your mind says, oh, and your mind is like, oh, yes, I see that. Okay. And you even see that one who's saying that. So that's all illumined. Whatever the mind is recognizing certain things that are being pointed out. But now what if I say, notice that your being is not changing at all, in spite of all of the coming and going and the different thoughts going in the mind. Your being, your own presence, is not changing. I'm asking the mind to notice that. Can the mind notice that or not? So absolutely the mind can notice it, because your being is self-evident, it's self-shining, and it is the very truth of the mind. So now if I ask the mind, can you notice the presence, the conscious being that you are, that's illumining your very mind? Can you notice that you don't change? Yes, I notice that. I don't change. Can you notice the mind is changing, but that I am not, that the self is not? Yes, I can notice that. Why? Because you are there and you're not changing. And the mind is not away from you. So the mind can make comments on all of this, what you perceive, and so it can also make comments on the conscious being, which is the very self that illumines all those perceptions. Mm. So the mind itself will comment, yeah, I, the self, the conscious being, is not changing at all. Then what if I say to you, the mind, what are you like? Can you describe your nature? Just you, the changeless self. Can you put some words to it? Yeah. I don't change. I am full. I am stable. I am quiet. You can put all kinds of words to it. They're descriptors, and the only person who's going to understand what you're talking about is somebody who's doing the same thing. Your friends will say, yes, I could use that. We could use those words. I could use those words. You know, it's wholeness, it's strong, it's strength. Yeah. How would she say, why is she saying strength? Well, because nothing can move it. It's true, she could use that word. You know, like that. Because the words are pointing to the reality that your mind is labeling. Okay, so now, say we do that little exercise and you've labeled yourself, that silent presence that you are. You've used these words, and the Upanishads use all kinds of words to point. But the only way that you can understand what those words mean is for you to recognize what they are pointing at as your own being, so that you can say, oh, that's why they say I am Sat. That's why they say I'm Chit, or that I am Shanti, or that I am Purnam, whole and complete. That's why they use these words. Why do they say Ananda? Why do they use the word Ananda? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe because there's nothing more dear to me. Is that true? The self, is there anything that would replace me, or do I want this conscious being to be any different? You know, all these kind of things, you start owning, understanding what those words are pointing at, why they are using those words. And so it's not that the mind can only comment upon the world that's experienced, being experienced. It can comment on you, the self-evident you. And that's why there can be a teaching that takes place through the use of words, because those words are pointing at yourself. Even though you're not an object in the world, you are the self-evident presence because of which all of these objects are known. You know? And so Ramana's just trying to... He's forgetting about Ishwara. He doesn't care right now about Ishwara or the object of reality. He's trying to make you look at your very personal reality from the standpoint of the jiva. What is the relationship of you, the conscious being that you are, to this world? You know, who are you in reference to this world? And he started out by saying this whole world that we experience can't be experienced without the body, which is composed of these five koshas. Without the body, there's who sees it. So he says, who's experiencing it? You know, and so actually this body, mind, sense organs is part of the world. Right? The world requires it in order to participate. To participate in the world, you need this body, mind, sense organs that is made of the same material as the world. Right? But when you get rid of the body, the mind, sense organs, what is consciousness doing? From the standpoint of consciousness, you know, which is there when you awake to the world and with the mind goes back to sleep, the consciousness is simply abiding. It's not performing any function of knowing. It is the consciousness because of which, with the mind and the sense organs, the world is known. But I'm actually not doing anything. Nor do I particularly, I don't even, from the standpoint of my mind, I could say, do I want to do anything? Does consciousness want to do anything? No, I don't want to do anything. I am absolutely whole and complete as I am. That's why, you know, when Swamiji always tells the story of in India, in Powai, we have a beautiful temple with a Shiva, white marble Shiva, sitting in lotus position, you know, as so many deities are in lotus position, with the eyes closed, and this beautiful smile that the deities will have, just in meditation, this beautiful smile. And this mother and her little boy were there, and the little boy says, Mommy, you know, who's Shiva meditating on? You know, who's the Lord meditating on? And so here's Shiva just sitting, you know, with that beautiful half smile. What does he want to do? Does he want to do anything? That's the idea. Yeah. Does he say, oh, I'm so bored. I'm so bored, Shiva. There's no boredom. Because it's ananda. You're ananda. And so the nature of the self is whole. That's why we say it's purnam. It's whole and complete. It's just one whole, complete me that is not subject to coming and going. It's not subject to birth and death. That's shunyam. Shunyam means that janmakshaya shunyam. There's no such thing for me. There's no coming and going. There's no change. Would I get bored? No, because ananda. It is your very nature is what you're trying to find within duality. That's the samsara. It's like everybody's going around searching for themselves. And Ramana will always say to his students, who are you? Who is the one that's searching? Because he's trying to make you go to the core of your experience, to where whose nature is what all beings seek, in fact. You know, that's why we always say that what you seek is hidden in the seeker. You know, it's not even hidden in the seeker. It's really what you seek is the very self of the seeker. There's no better hiding place, really. What you seek is the very self of the seeker. So that said this too, what actually is there in reality that doesn't come into being and go out of being, you know, it's, you know, that said, this too is what is free from, which is the very self of all of this coming and going, and which itself is not subject to birth and death, and is ekam purnam. So that's his little trilogy. Let's take a break. Let's take a moment. Om Purnamidam Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
You know, even when you were doing that meditation at the beginning, we were just abiding in conscious being, the sense of all these bodies, they went away because it was just one conscious being.
Yeah.
Especially from
what Ramana, I think, wants is for you to recognize just that one conscious being. And that every other perception that you have is really dependent upon something within duality. You know, it's a mutual dependence for every type of experience of perception that you have is a mutual dependence. And all of it is subject to coming and going. There's only one thing that's not subject to coming and going, and that's the very being in which the whole thing is taking place. And we act like it's something that's something other than that being, like there's a pot other than the clay. Mm-hmm. There is no other substance, if we want to use that word. There's no other thing there. You know, you can't grab onto it as a thing separate from being itself.
But you know, it's hard to think that the body's not producing this consciousness, or my mind, Edward's mind, is not the origin.
Yeah, but I know. But that's why, if you just take one moment of experience, you can. There, part of the experience is changing, and part isn't. Something which is not changing, something which is changing. Anything that changes is gone, and you're still here. And so you can break that down and as far as you want into milliseconds or whatever. It's as it changes, it is gone. That is never a problem for you because nothing has really happened in terms of what actually is. What actually is never changes at all. And so in spite of the coming and going, very quickly in fact, of everything in the universe, there is no coming and going for what actually is. And that is in fact your experience. But we don't notice our experience because the experience is the bottom line that is true for every moment. Right? And since it's there for every moment, it becomes almost invisible. You know, because it's the very stuff, the changeless stuff of every moment, so you don't notice it. What you notice is what is changing. And also, what is changing is noticed by what is changing. The subject-object, you know, the subject-object is existing within duality. And so, but neither one of them, you know, has any reality either, apart from the being that you are. But we don't normally think of it like that. The being that you are gets superimposed on this body, mind, sense organs, and then everything else is not me. But once you recognize yourself, just as you are, you recognize that all experience, all of this, including the body, the mind, the sense organs, every aspect of changing experience is taking place in you, which doesn't change. So remember with us when we're teaching, say we teach from different Upanishads and different texts, we're always going to be bringing in Ishvara or bringing in the objective world. Mm-hmm. But Ramana doesn't do that. Mm-hmm. He's not interested in that for the most part. He is interested in making you see your experience. You know, going really into the stand from the standpoint of the jiva. Yeah. Because most people won't be satisfied with that in some ways because they want to know, yeah, but it's my mind and this is an external reality and so it's not just my mind and all. He doesn't care about that. He wants you to differentiate the experience that you're actually having. See what I mean? It's not making a comment on the reality of the world. We go in and do make all of those comments in Vedanta when we're, you know, when we're unfolding most Upanishads, but Ramana stays pretty focused on the analysis of your experience. And your experience is really you and your mind. You can say there's an external world and everything, but that's not your experience. Your experience is you and what is given to your mind. And then now we have to differentiate that experience, you know, the difference between, in that experience between me and my mind, who am I and what is the mind? What comes and goes, what stays, you know, what can be objectified, what can't be objectified, what is not subject to any type of modification, what is, to get to the core of your being.
And there's no division or separation there.
Not for the Atma. And also, we say mind, but it's not like there's me and the mind. Like, for instance, if we use the, like the mind's over here and I'm here, no. It's not that the pot's over here and the clay's over here. If there's no separation, distance between you and the mind. Just like there's no distance between the clay and the pot. But one is mithya. One has no, it's moving and it's beautiful in the sense it's so creative and wondrous and everything that Maya is. But that doesn't mean that it has a separate reality. That's what makes it so incredible. It's like this, that's why that whole concept of Ishwara is so incredible. It's like consciousness itself manifests, you know, this infinite, in this infinite form that we call the creation, or we call Ishwara. There's nothing but Ishwara. You know, that this whole infinite creation is an infinite manifestation of consciousness. But consciousness doesn't go through any type of change to become this. That's what we mean by Maya. It doesn't have any separate, it doesn't have any hold on consciousness. It can't do anything to consciousness. It comes and goes in consciousness, just like the snake can't do anything to the rope. It's impossible, you know. But that there's a snake there is incredible. You know, that there's a creation is an absolute wonder. That you get to walk through it is amazing. Because in reality, you are all of this. This isn't, there's nobody else. This is the manifestation of your being. But then from this vantage point, having been a jiva, I'm walking through myself in this infinite form. You know, but then there's so many questions and so much to understand about that. Ramana, for the most part, doesn't deal with that. He has a certain teaching style where he wants you to recognize the reality of your experience, of your immediate experience. It's very beautiful, really. So I like to bring in all the other things through the other Upanishads.
So is there actually a way around that? I mean, there's no way, it doesn't seem like there's a way around having this immediate experience. I mean, it's got to be part of...
It has to be. It is, yeah. Absolutely. That's why the Upanishads, the Vedanta, Advaita Vedanta is a pramana. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a teaching methodology. It's not a philosophy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't view itself as a philosophy at all. It's a teaching methodology where the student comes to the guru. And all of the Upanishads, the student comes in to the teacher, says, please teach me. Who am I? Is there anything about me that survives death? And then the Upanishads will all begin with the student approaching the teacher and asking in one way or another, you know. And then they'll always bring in also the adhikari, the qualified student. Like, why, you know, who is this student that is asking this question? Why are they asking this question? You know, what are their qualifications? Like, what type of a person asks a question like this? All of that is brought in the Upanishads.
So I have one more question. You know, about the self-evident view versus the world of the objects, right? So you said the mind is able to look eyes away.
Yeah.
But it seems like...
Comment on either, right?
Well, I'm just wondering, can the mind actually experience both of these sides at the same time?
Yes. Absolutely, because the reason that is so is that your consciousness, which you are, is self-evident. It doesn't require the mind, and it doesn't change. It doesn't need the mind to be commenting upon it. It is its own self-evident experience. I don't mean that as an object. It's a self-shining. Okay. Now, also, the mind has whatever content it has. Like, say, right now it has the content of the room, for instance. So there's the vritti present, the thought modification present, and I am present. My self-experience isn't dependent on the presence or absence of the vritti. And so both your being, the changelessness of your being is there, as well as the name, form, whatever is in the mind. But what you notice is that I am always the same. The name form goes on changing, and both are simultaneously present.
I get that. And at the same time, my experience is more like that they oscillate, and they can oscillate really quick. But the awareness of this world, of the world of objects, and the awareness of me being consciousness, it seems like they're not all... It's like, it's not a...
There can be a...
They oscillate. I think it's the closest I can describe that.
Okay, yeah. But that's okay. What you're describing it in terms of is in terms of the mental vritti. Like if the mind is focusing on the object, focusing on the self, object, yeah. Self, object, yeah. Self. However, this is the difference. This is the little different thing about it. You have to notice. The vritti can be focusing. Mm-hmm. The self is not dependent on the vritti for its self-experience. Mm-hmm. It doesn't require focusing or not focusing. The mind can be commenting. Mm-hmm. That's true. And can be doing it very quickly. But your being doesn't require comment. And so then you start recognizing that no matter what's going on, mm-hmm. what the conversation is, even that right now, like for instance, I'm talking right now, you and I are talking. But while all of this activity is going on, I'm stable. I'm not talking from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. But talking is going on. Both are there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it also makes sense, this quick oscillation of the mind. Noticing, like Swamiji sometimes once said, he said, somebody was saying, don't you get tired? You know, because he just says, oh, I just rest between thoughts. You know, but that's the same as what you're saying. It's like the mind, you know, and the mind's not doing something, then it's just sitting at home.
But it's not exactly oscillating, it's simultaneous.
No, the simultaneity is there. But then there's also the mind, which is by nature oscillating, right? Yeah. It's always oscillating. It's talking about this, talking about that, talking about this, talking about that, talking about self, whatever it's doing. It's oscillating in every conceivable direction. Mm-hmm. That's true. But the self, which is sometimes focused on by the mind, need not be focused on by the mind. Mm-hmm. It's as present to an external vritti as it is to a focused vritti. And that changeless presence is self-evident. Once the ignorance has been removed, the ignorance that has caused the total identification, you know, with the body or the mind or the sense organs. That's why that ignorance has to go. And it's not that it's not the same as in order for me to see the painting, I have to bring my sense organs, focus it on the painting, so then my mind will have a vritti of the painting, have a thought modification of the painting. If I turn this way, then I have to remember the painting, right? I need my sense organs and mind focused on the painting to have an experience of the painting, otherwise it's memory. For the self, you don't need memory. You don't need to be focused. It is. It's always the same. It is always self-evident. I don't need a pramana. I don't need a mind or sense organs in order to give me the self-experience. So that's why self-knowledge is quite a bit different than knowledge of objects. Self-knowledge is only really removing the ignorance that has caused you to take your self-experience to be this body. Or my self-experience is one with the mental, my thoughts. That's the ignorance. The teaching has to come along and make you recognize, oh, wait a minute, the thoughts go on, the experiences go on, changing, coming and going, but I'm not changing at all. I'm always exactly the same. You know?
Yes. I thought it's true. I think it's I was thinking about it also in the meditation. It's confusing because we're used to be aware. Like, aware is also something usually you almost do in the mind. Aware of my body, I'm doing it with my mind. I'm like doing some scanning. I'm aware of my thought. And it's kind of like I feel like in order to know myself, I need to drop at some point my mind. It's kind of like, because it's coming from a different level. And if I'm trying to know it, like we're doing from the teaching of the mind and my thoughts, it's helping to sense something, but it won't grasp it till the end. I mean, that's my experience.
The thoughts, what has to happen is that there has to be a differentiation between consciousness and all of the activity of the thoughts. The scanning of the thoughts, the knowing this, the knowing that. There's something, your being takes place, is stable amidst all of that. And that's what needs to be differentiated. It's not about the mind turning around and looking at consciousness. It's recognizing that consciousness is the stable part of the mental experience. Those words can either work or not. They have to actually land on it.
Yeah, and that it's not a mental experience.
It's not a mental experience. Yeah. Yeah. It is the constant experience in which mental experience comes and goes. That's what Ramana is saying. The mental experiences rise and they set. Consciousness doesn't rise or set. Yeah.
So it's like a screen. The self-evident is the screen, and the sense perceptions are just projections on the screen, but the screen is always there.
So they use that example sometimes. Yeah. The example can be confusing. Sometimes they use the consciousness as the screen, or they'll talk about the light that's going through the film strip. Mm-hmm. That's another example. But remember, those are just examples. They have to land on the fact of it. They can be helpful, though.
Right, because the point of the whole discussion is actually how much are you aware of the screen being there all the time, right?
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. the whole point.
Yeah, the screen is always there, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You done?